Welcome to Resounding Verse, a podcast about poetry and song. Sag, wo ist dein schönes Liebchen? Or tell me, where is your beautiful sweetheart? By Heinrich Heine. Read first in English translation by me, and then in the original German by my dear friend Harold Krebs. Tell me, where is your beautiful sweetheart that you once sang of so beautifully when the magical flames of love wonderfully pierced your heart? Each flame is burnt out, and my heart is cold and gray, and this little book is the urn with the ashes of my love.
Sag, wo ist dein schönes Liebchen, das du einst so schön besungen, als die zaubermächt'gen Flammen wunderbar dein Herz durchdrungen? Jene Flammen sind erloschen, und mein Herz ist kalt und trübe, und dies Büchlein ist die Urne mit der Asche meiner Liebe.
This poem was written by one of the most famous poets of the 19th century, or of any century, a poet whose poetry was set to music countless times, hundreds and hundreds of times, by some of the most famous composers of the era. Composers like Robert Schumann, for example, who set Heine's poetry in his famous song cycle Dichterliebe, or A Poet's Love. Also Franz Schubert, who set six of Heine's poems in his cycle Schwanengesang, or Swan Song. This particular poem comes from one of the most famous collections of poetry ever published, and that is Heine's Book of Songs, published in 1827. This collection of poems, which included everything that he had published up to that point in his life, contains over 230 poems arranged into several different books. And this poem is the last of the book called Die Heimkehr, or The Homecoming. On a literal reading, the poem is about lost love. The first stanza of the poem, which is in quotation marks, represents someone else speaking to the poetic speaker, and this person asks him, where is his beautiful sweetheart? Where is this sweetheart that he sang of so beautifully long ago? The second stanza is the poetic speaker himself, and he says that the flames of love have been extinguished, that his heart is cold and gray, and that in his hands is a book that contains the ashes of his beloved. The book, of course, being the book of poetry that Heine has written, the poems themselves that express this sense of loss and longing for an absent or unattainable beloved. But there's another way to read the poem, more figuratively, more metaphorically, not about the loss of a beloved, but about the loss of romanticism, indeed about the death of romanticism. Heine was a poet who was born into Romanticism and who knew the sounds of Romantic poetry and wrote with those sounds and those images in his mind, but he came to see Romantic poetry as something that was woefully unable to alleviate the miseries of the real world. Romanticism, after all, was about the expression of inner emotions, about communing with nature, about individual experience, about subjectivity, all these things that were expressed with beautiful language. And for Heine, this wasn't enough. He thought that Romantic poets were failing to address the real-world issues that people were facing and the trials and difficulties of being a human being in that world. In this context, the beautiful sweetheart that we hear about in the first line of the poem is Romanticism itself, something that Heine had sung of so beautifully in his youth when he embraced Romantic poetry, but which now has lost its luster. It has burned itself out. It's just a heap of ashes, and Heine offers a kind of elegy to it with this poem, or rather, a good riddance. That he says good riddance to Romantic poetry with the language of Romantic poetry is, of course, the great paradox of this poem. The first stanza is full of imagery and sounds that bespeak Romanticism. Words like beautiful, heart, wonderful, magical, some of which are words that sound beautiful just coming out of your mouth. Zaubermächtigen, for example, which means magical or enchanted. The second stanza of the poem recasts some of those words and ideas, turning them on their heads. So we hear flames again, for example. The first line of the second stanza is, each flame is burnt out. And we heard about the flames of love in the first stanza. We hear the word heart again, too. The second line of the second stanza is, and my heart is cold and gray. Whereas earlier, we heard about his heart that was pierced through by those flames of love. And all of this prepares us for the real clincher of the poem, the darkest moment, I think, when we hear the word Urne in German, or urn in English. And this little book is the urn with the ashes of my love. Things take a turn, in other words, at the beginning of the second stanza, when the poet himself starts speaking, but they really take a turn at the end of the poem, in its final line, where we move from coldness and darkness to death and ashes. When I read this poem, I can't help but think of another poem from Book of Songs, which likewise falls at the end of one of the main sections of this collection of poetry, and that's a poem called The Old Angry Songs, in which the poet takes all of his love and his sorrow and puts it into a coffin and then sends it out to sea. And this is a poem made famous by Robert Schumann, since he used it as the last song in his cycle Dichterliebe. So in that poem, he's burying his love and his songs and his sorrows into the waves of the sea. And here, he's doing it into the lines of a book. Sag, wo ist dein schönes Liebchen? Or tell me, where is your beautiful sweetheart? By Heinrich Heine. Tell me, where is your beautiful sweetheart that you once sang of so beautifully when the magical flames of love wonderfully pierced your heart? Each flame is burnt out, and my heart is cold and gray. And this little book is the urn with the ashes of my love.
Sag, wo ist dein schönes Liebchen, das du einst so schön besungen, als die zaubermächt'gen Flammen wunderbar dein Herz durchdrungen? Jene Flammen sind erloschen, und mein Herz ist kalt und trübe, und dies Büchlein ist die Urne mit der Asche meiner Liebe.
And now, here is a musical setting of Heine's poem by Rodrigo Ruiz.
Thank you.
My guess is that if you know nothing about Rodrigo Ruiz, and I asked you to tell me who you think he is after listening to this song, you might guess that he's a very little-known composer from the early part of the 19th century. In fact, Rodrigo Ruiz was born in 1988 in Tijuana. He's a young, living, vibrant Mexican composer who writes music that channels the spirit and the style of 19th century music. Rodrigo Ruiz is not just a composer, he's also a conductor who got a master's degree at the University of Michigan, and a mythologist who's currently pursuing a PhD in mythological studies at Pacifica Graduate Institute. I first got to know Rodrigo Ruiz's music because I heard a terrific recording, a CD of his called Behold the Stars, which contains not vocal works, but some remarkable chamber works. I was just floored by the beauty and lyricism and ease of this music. And I have to say that in the midst of the anxieties and pressures of the pandemic, hearing something that was unabashedly beautiful really provided a kind of balm for me, a sort of comfort during this time. It was only after getting to know his music that I discovered that we are alums of Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin, a small college with a liberal arts school and a conservatory of music. And once I knew this, I thought, well, I have to reach out to Rodrigo Ruiz and get to know him even better. Since then, I've had many conversations with him over Zoom, alas, sometimes between here and Italy, where he's based, and sometimes between here and Mexico, where he's visiting his family. And I've been delighted to get to know more about what makes him tick and what makes his music so remarkable. You might think that to write music in 2021 that isn't just tonal, there are plenty of composers today who are writing tonal style music, but that channels the style of an earlier tonal era. You might think that to do this is to perform a kind of radical act. But interestingly, Rodrigo Ruiz doesn't see what he's doing as something particularly radical. He's not making a choice to buck convention and to draw upon an earlier idiom to chart his own path. He's just doing what comes naturally to him. He grew up, as I said, in Tijuana, in a place where he said there wasn't much classical music going on, but his father loved to listen to classical music records. And so around the house, they were constantly listening to Beethoven and Schubert and Schumann and Brahms. This was the music that was in his ears from a very young age. He told me that when he was 5, he decided he wanted to take piano lessons, but he wasn't able to for a variety of reasons. And it wasn't until he was 12 years old that he first started playing the piano. And at that time, he was improvising and playing music that sounded like the music that he'd been listening to from his childhood. Mozart, Haydn, Beethoven, Brahms, and the like. He told me that composition was not really sitting and writing down music, but playing the piano and improvising pieces that sounded like these pieces that he knew well. And it wasn't until he was 17 or 18 that he really first put pen to paper and started writing down some of these compositions, quote-unquote, that he'd been playing for years. The Heine setting that you just heard comes from a collection of 3 Heine settings that he wrote in 2013 and 2014 and that appeared in recording on an album called An Everlasting Dawn, his first album, which was released in 2017. And the performance, by the way, is by soprano Grace Davidson and pianist Christopher Glynn. He told me that when he wrote these 3 songs, he was deeply immersed in Schubert songs. He'd been playing through several collections of Schubert songs, and those melodies, those harmonies, that style was in his mind when he sat down to write these pieces. I can hear Schubert in this particular song, especially at the beginning of the song, where we hear an arpeggiated right hand that sounds like just the kind of thing you would hear in Die Schöne Müllerin, for example, Schubert's famous song cycle about a brook that murmurs and interacts with the main character of the cycle. Listen for the elegance and gracefulness of the opening melody as it climbs gently upward and then falls downward for the first 2 lines of the poem. Tell me, where is your beautiful sweetheart? that you once sang of so beautifully, and then notice a couple touches of text painting. At the end of these first two lines, the piano echoes what the singer just sang. So we hear it enacting the singing of the poetic speaker. And then notice the repetition of the word wunderbar, or wonderfully. We hear it three times, and there's a rolled chord in the piano that captures the piercing quality of the flames that overwhelmed him when he was in the presence of his beautiful sweetheart. The next part of the song, the setting of the second stanza about the flame that has been extinguished and the heart that is cold and gray, at first surprised me when I listened to the song. I had read the poem many times over and interpreted the beginning of the second stanza as a kind of gear shift, where we move from the person speaking to the poetic speaker to the poetic speaker himself, and from the memories of his experience with his beloved, whether, again, that's a person or an artistic tradition, to the present moment where that experience has been sapped of everything that gave it life. I could imagine a composer really emphasizing this gear shift with, for example, a sudden shift to a minor key or to a more spare piano texture. But that's not what Rodrigo Ruiz does. He does something much more interesting and subtle, something that picks up on the gradual shift from light to dark over the course of this poem. He sets the first two lines of the second stanza to music in a major key, in D-flat major. The song, by the way, began in A-flat major, and this part of the song sounds even warmer, even richer, even more fluid. The accompaniment flows with sixteenths in the left hand, the melody soars upward, even higher than it had previously, and everything sounds like a beautiful outpouring. It's like you're being embraced by the warmth of the sound in this section. Shift to a minor key, which you just heard at the end of this passage, happens not at the beginning of the stanza, as I might have done it in my hypothetical composition, but instead toward the middle of the stanza, on that crucial word urna, or urn. What Rodrigo Ruiz does, in short, is allow the move toward darkness and death to happen not suddenly, but gradually. And everything, therefore, points toward the urn and its ashes. When I talked with Rodrigo Ruiz about this song, he used the word charged to describe this moment where the word urn first appears and where we move fully into B-flat minor. And I think that's a great word to describe this moment and the way he treats it. I'll play it again and notice that the melody doesn't descend stepwise on urna, but instead uses a dissonant leap. And then the dissonant note doesn't resolve immediately, but holds over the measure to underline the pain of this moment. to make the songs and therefore the poems shift from bright to darker to darkest, even more powerful, Rodrigo Ruiz repeats the word urna. This is my favorite moment in the song, where we hear a descending half-step motive on diurna, and it's accompanied by descending sixth in the right hand of the piano. All of this, of course, suggests descent to the grave. The song, having started in A-flat major, ends in A-flat minor. And this, by the way, is another Schubertian gesture. Schubert loves to shift from major keys to minor keys, and those musical shifts often underline psychological shifts. I have to confess, though, that even though this song ends with the same tonic note, A-flat, it doesn't quite sound that way to me. I have a pretty good ear, and I can tell when a piece has moved to a different key and can usually tell what key that is, and I can normally tell that a piece has ended with the same tonic. But here, there's something about the treatment of A-flat minor that makes it sound even more distant, even further from home, even further from the beautiful world described in the first stanza of the poem and the first section of the song. I think it's because the move to A-flat minor happens so quickly. It just takes three measures for us to get there, having spent so much time in B-flat minor, that key that was really clinched with that charged moment where we first heard the word urna. It's a brilliant maneuver, and it makes the final line of the poem and the despairing world that it describes seem even further removed from the bliss of the opening. Heine's poems often involve a shift in tone at the end, what's sometimes called a break in the mood, a Stimmungsbrechung, or what I've sometimes seen described as a twist of the knife. This poem, with its turn toward urns and ashes, is no exception. And Rodrigo Ruiz's affecting setting of it, with its turn toward a darkened tonic that sounds like another world, makes the knife cut even deeper. And here, once more, is Rodrigo Ruiz's Sag, wo ist dein schönes Liebchen, or Tell Me, Where is Your Beautiful Sweetheart? Thank you. Thank you to Harold Krebs for reading the poem in its original German, and also to Susan Ewens for helping me to understand Heine's poem better. And finally, heartfelt thanks to Rodrigo Ruiz for talking with me at length about himself and about his music, and for giving me permission to use this recording of his song. To listen and subscribe to the podcast, go to resoundingverse.buzzsprout.com. Resounding Verse is produced by me, Steve Rogers. Thank you for listening.